I'm Frank Vaughn. It's October 7th, 2024. She Elohim Yishmad et Hamas Yamashmam. As much as I would like to get into that and the subject of Ukraine, I feel it necessary to respond to some comments that I received after yesterday's video concerning Saskatchewan. I want to give those comments their due for a few minutes. So how much of Mo's dirty money are you getting? This is a silly question. It's not the first time since I've come back that I've received this question, whether it's the Mo government or it's Jewish money or, I mean, it's lazy. That's really all I want to say. This is extremely lazy. When someone expresses an opinion that you don't like, to accuse them of being bought and paid for. So this is the least relevant comment. I don't get paid by anybody. People can choose to donate and support the work which I provide freely. I've been asked in emails whether or not I will do super chats. I will not. I do not believe in sending Google a third of the money that you would support me with any more than I believe I should be sending 10% or 15% or we should have any middlemen. PayPal is bad enough. If you want to support me directly. That's the most efficient way to do it. Forget super chats. It's never going to happen. So that's the least relevant. Moving on to the second least relevant. Scott kicked Nadine Wilson out because she wouldn't cave into Scott's BS. Scott is no better than the NDP. Nadine is the one that you should be supporting. And my response was, I do support Nadine and I've met her twice and I have. I gave Nadine unsolicited advice as to how to proceed with strengthening Sask United. And that advice was not heeded, and we're going to get into that a little bit later. But she did resign, and Scott accepted her resignation because she lied about her vaccine status justifiably. I've always believed that she's been done wrong, and it was a mistake of the SAS party not to make peace with her in the wake of the lifting of the mandates and maybe invite her back into caucus. But that's politics, and even in Saskatchewan, politics gets played. And it's not always a kind and just game, but we move on and we learn. Used to think you might be okay, not anymore. Check out Mo's speech to the unvaccinated. Yes, he did say something very similar to what was being said by other politicians, though he did not threaten to go door to door. And yes, there was a mandate applied to places that sold alcohol and weed. But there wasn't a mandate applied in many other areas of the economy where it was applied in Ontario. Culturally, Saskatchewan was much more resilient in the face of those mandates, whereas in Ontario, most people are still walking around as though they are in a pandemic. It's rather bizarre. I don't know if I finished the story yesterday about my arrival in this province, but it was so refreshing that in April of 2022, almost nobody was wearing masks here. You have to understand that in Ontario, the vast majority of people still were, and the political opposition to the Ford government were still doing it to try and shore up their support. I am never going to argue that it wasn't bad here. What I am telling you is that it wasn't as bad as it was everywhere else. That is not to diminish it. It is to provide perspective. From an outsider coming in and looking at things, it was better here, objectively. And this was the first place to lift. And as I said in my previous video, this was the first place to actually listen to the other side. And I dare say that if a similar situation were to crop up, the Saskatchewan government and the Saskatchewan people are going to be far more resilient and resistant to any mandates that the federal government tries to push. The zeitgeist and the push was so vast that almost no country, no land, and no government, and no people fully escaped the paranoia that the Black Death was about to descend upon us. It was quite the time in history, and amends should be made for it. There's no doubt. But I am just trying to provide some perspective from my experience. And the next one is actually the, hang on a second, we got to get our clickies in order here. Yes, I said the word clickies. This comment is actually much more valid, and I want to address it. I want to give it the respect it's due. Saskatchewan is drowning in healthcare problems, education problems, mass immigration, gender problems. You are so far disconnected from what's going on in politics in Saskatchewan with most forced lockdowns, the alphabet gender taught to nine-year-olds, the devastating healthcare here. The SAS party is just an extension of the federal Liberals. Did you know they were created by melding the SASC Liberal and PC parties? We need a change here like the original SASC party did. Now, the comment is kind of all over the place, but it does have some validity, which I want to get into. I'm very familiar with how the SASC party formed, how it came into being, and how it came to power. Desperate frustration with the NDP caused the fragmented political opposition to unite under a new party banner. But the idea that the SAS party is an extension of the federal Liberal NDP coalition, this individual says the Liberal government, but it is a Liberal NDP government, it's completely untenable. The idea that the SAS party isn't trying to do something about the gender nonsense being taught in Saskatchewan schools, they're in court right now fighting for parental rights to know that your children are being coached into this nonsense in their schools, and they're being opposed by the public sector unions, not their own MPs. They're being opposed by the court system in Canada, and they're being lambasted for wanting to use the notwithstanding clause to protect parental rights. Mo and his government have made a commitment towards a parental bill of rights. That is amazing. That is not an extension of the Federal Liberal Party. That is an attempt to fight this nonsense. And it should be celebrated, and it should be amplified, and we should be wishing them success and continued success. I believe that if they're reelected, they will strengthen parental rights, and they will push back on this, and they will use their powers to make sure the job gets done. That's my belief, and I believe it's backed up by the evidence, considering the litigation that is ongoing. So that's one point that I think we can just dispense with that right now. The SAS party is moving against that. Healthcare problems. The entire nation is bogged down in a healthcare crisis because the system itself is broken. Canada spends an enormous amount of money on a per-patient basis and delivers diminishing returns constantly. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And as I've said in other videos, we should be looking at other OECD countries and asking how they do it better for less money. The problem in Canada is not funding. It is the structure of the healthcare system itself. Every other nation that delivers universal care has a private component, which we resist, like North Koreans in this country for some reason. As care gets worse, we resist the solutions. And who is behind that resistance? Mainly it's the public sector unions who put their interests ahead of your health care while saying and parading on your health care. So they basically use declining services as a shield to promote their interests as you, the customer, get screwed in the healthcare system. That has to change. We have to fundamentally change how access is done and how the funding, it's not just the funding model. The system itself needs to be redesigned, and a private component must be introduced. As I said in a previous video, thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of people leave this country to seek health care somewhere else and spend money out of their own pocket on top of the taxation they pay for the system here, which is broken and they can't use in many places. We could have that money here. We could be collecting tax revenue off that money. It could be then used to fund the public system. That tax revenue would go right back into tax coffers that fund universal health care. And all the while, it would reduce load on the system. The second thing we need to do is put an onus on prevention and start telling the truth about how your diet is responsible for most of the diseases that we suffer in Western society, from cancers to type 2 diabetes to heart conditions. We can start incentivizing people to get healthy. Imagine, just as a spitball for instance, there was a cash incentive, not a tax credit, but an actual payment that if you're an overweight person and you lose fixed amounts of weight, you get money. And there would have to be a condition that you keep it off. You would have to demonstrate change. I don't know the particulars. But think of the money we could save the healthcare system in open heart surgeries, chemo treatments, type 2 diabetes, all this talk about insulin, if we just financially incentivized people to get healthy. I would be up for that investment. We're talking, we could do thousands of dollars ahead to get people to lose weight and change their lifestyles. That might be something to look at. It should be something to look at because the core problem is too many people are ending up trying to use the system. We need to unburden the system, not fund it more. We need to figure out how to get people out of hospitals. We need to figure out how to get people out of the healthcare system and leading healthy lives. There are other solutions, but I mean, we need to have a conversation around this. Healthcare is broken, and it's not because of the SAS party alone. It's not. It is such a complicated issue to blame any one political party is naive. I think the unions and the bureaucracy have far more to do with the problems in healthcare in this country than government. I think the declining and poor health of individuals has far more to do with the overburdening of our system. North America has a very unique problem when it comes to obesity, when it comes to our disease profile. We need to ask why. RFK in the United States talks about this. He's looking like he's going to be part of the Trump administration. This is where the conversation starts. When America gets a cold, when it sneezes, the rest of the world gets sick. When America moves, so too the world. Things may change rather rapidly in the next 10 years, and we might find ourselves in possession of the ability to have a conversation around real and actual lasting solutions to our healthcare problems. Now, I've already addressed the lockdowns and the way things went here. Sure, it's bad. Sure, it was bad. But do we want to throw the baby out with the bathwater? Do we want to take out our eye in spite of our face? Do we want to hand the NDP, the province of Saskatchewan, so that they can spend 4 years completely changing it? And actually, this notion that the SAS party is an extension of the Liberal NDP government, the NDP themselves walk hand in hand, the provincial NDP, walk hand in hand with the federal NDP. They support them. So you would just be giving the government over to the people who are openly not opposed to what the federal government is doing. Doesn't make any sense. This is an emotive response. We do need change. The SAS party is running somewhere around the neighborhood of 20 brand new candidates because many of the old guard have dropped out. I mean, after long enough serving in public life, you leave, and there's also certain people who have allegations of corruption against them, so they're exiting stage left. But new blood is flooding into the SAS party. It remains to be seen what is built out of that new blood. But something that we really should take into consideration is this. Now, I guess I got to shrink myself. The polls show the SAS party ahead, but I don't really trust polling, and polling is not very complete here. If voter turnout is suppressed because people are fed up with the SAS party, it might be enough to put the NDP over the line, and that's a problem. Now, you want a different choice. You want a different option. People have said Sask United. People have said Buffalo. I prefer Sask United if we're going to build an option. But I feel like they should have concentrated their efforts in places where they actually stood a chance of winning instead of spreading it out. Because as it stands today, Sask United is not ready to govern. They've only fielded 23 candidates, and we are mere weeks away from the election. Buffalo, at this stage, it's not even a serious contender. They have fielded 17 candidates. Even if every single person in those ridings voted for those people, they can't form a government. Now, that in no way, in particular with Sask United, is trying to discourage them from building that party. But it is not ready today to govern. In this election, which we now have at hand, there are two choices, the Sask Party and the NDP. So let's think about this. Let's be a little bit critical here. I know that the perspective of the people who've lived here the longest is valid. I would not try to take away that validity. But as I said in yesterday's video, I bring a perspective from somewhere else. I can tell you, but I can't make you understand how much worse it can get. One of the things in the gentleman's comment, he talked about mass immigration. Certainly, Saskatchewan must be very careful about the types of culture it imports, the things that it promotes here, the emphasis on population, pure population growth. I understand why the government talks about population growth when you consider that the population was shrinking here. They've reversed this trend. And in a way, that's a win. But you need to score why it's reversing, and you need to make sure that you keep score that the people that are coming have Saskatchewan's best interests at heart. You do not want to turn the province into the post-national city-states that Toronto and Vancouver practically represent at this stage, where there's every kind of grievance being promoted on the streets, except for those that are unique to Saskatchewan or even Canada. It can get so much worse. Now, if you break into the demographics and you look at the primary sources of immigration to Saskatchewan, that breakdown is much more promising and much better than that, say, of Ontario, BC, or even Alberta, which is heading under Smith when it comes to immigration and her pronouncements when it comes to immigration. I'm deeply concerned that the demography is going to shift so vastly that the very thing that we're trying to protect here in Saskatchewan will disappear from Alberta within a generation or two. But that's a problem that needs to be faced. There's some accountability there and hopefully a change of trajectory. Hopefully the people of Alberta can preserve that culture because it's beautiful. Like I said, it's the last bastion of Western civilization, and the last thing that you want is for all these other ethnic and national causes to displace you in your own land. Now, Saskatchewan's in an enviable position because even though those problems exist here, again, it's a matter of scale. It's a much smaller scale than everywhere else. There's a real opportunity here to make sure that we have prosperity and we protect the cultural value at the same time. You will not be able to do that if you allow the NDP to form a majority government. It will change in the next 4 years in a way that cannot be easily reversed. Look west to Notley. The frustration with Redford led to Notley, which then led to Jay Kenney's weakness, which hopefully has led to a stronger, more resurgent Smith, more resurgent UCP membership. But the consequences of that frustration, that vengeance vote, I've heard so many times, that the election of Rachel Notley was a reaction in frustration to the politics of Alberta. Great, wonderful. Now you get the destruction and you get to clean up the mess. It just is what it is. Find me an Albertan that doesn't believe that. We would be very foolish to make that mistake here. Now, to finish this one up, I have heard it said that the individuals responsible for Saskatchewan elections have ties to the WEF and international organizations. But the head of Election Saskatchewan, or Saskatchewan Elections, I can't remember the formal name of the commission, has ran the last two elections. not just the COVID election with mail-in ballots, but the one previous. So I have some reason to believe that the elections are fair here. I would encourage people to vote in person. I would encourage any scrutineers who can, if there's any doubt whatsoever, demand recounts, because at this point you can do that. We don't have electronic voting, which is a net positive. We should never have it. It should always be paper ballots. If you want to have tabulators, have tabulators. But there should be some kind of mechanism where 5 to 10% of the precincts have to have mandatory recounts by hand so that you can make sure that your tabulators are accurate. It should be randomly selected. There should be a system in place to ensure that the tabulators are counting accurately. Now, a problem with tabulators is they are 10 times as likely to miscount one way or the other than hand counting. I'm always going to be in favor of hand counting the night of elections. I'm always going to be in favor of voting in person. I don't like tabulators. I don't like computer systems being involved in voting at all. But if you're going to have them, if you insist on having them, there are some mechanisms that you can employ to make sure that they're very close to 100% fair. Vote in person. Get out there and vote and consider. Consider what's at stake here. If you want to build an alternative, you want to build up Sask United, please do so. Maybe I'll be part of that in the next 4 years. But as of right now, today, nobody else is ready to govern aside from the Sask Party and the NDP. They're both parties positioned to govern. You have a binary. Do with that what you will.